talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Limit OPIC.
This is the Limit OPIC Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Do not adjust your set. This is Limit OPIC for the fifth hour. Yes, let me read some of the quotes. I am here from 9 till 2. That's Greenwich Mean Time on a Saturday. 10 till 2, Greenwich Mean Time on a Sunday. And hopefully you like the service. I don't do most of the talking. And let me just read some of the messages because some of them are quite amusing. Holly says, apparently aghast. Holly, I'm now going to put your tonality on as I imagine it. Is there another hour? I'm not going to get anything done before the rugby now. Holly, that's my concern. I promise I'll be finished before the rugby. I'm definitely watching what's called the Six Nations. If you don't live in the UK, that means very little, perhaps. We'll be finished for the rugby, Holly. Don't worry about that. A few other points. Little Carol says, is it just Limit all day? No, I finish at 2. You've got 55 minutes and then I'll be gone. Don't worry. But of course, you can listen again if you do want to listen to me all day. Grumpy old woman says, Limit's going to need to lay down after such a long shift. I can't. It's the rugby. Didn't you hear? It's 9 a.m. till 2, as Just a Bloke correctly says, on Saturdays, 10 till 2 on Sundays. We're just trying to reflect what you're watching and the feedback that we're getting. You seem to like this approach at weekends, but do give us your feedback. We want to give you what you want. It's not about me, it's about you. And hopefully you like the service. Red says, in relation to the discussion I've just had with Anne Widdecombe, the former government minister in the Conservatives and now very committed Reform UK activist, but not a candidate. She made it clear she's not standing for the Commons, will not be a member of a government, even if Reform won. Red says, I'm not interested in what any COVID enthusiast politicians have to say until they are prepared to admit their gross mistake. Red, I did consider raising the COVID issue with Anne. I previously talked about it with her, and she did say on one occasion on the show that no one was forced to have the jab. I responded by saying that that wasn't necessarily a view that I held, but we didn't have time to cover it at the time. I'm sure she'll be back in the future. And all I'd say to you is do remind me to ask that question, Red. I'd like to dig a little bit deeper into why she believes what she believes about the COVID vaccine. I'm not going to try to persuade her if she has a different view. You've got the right to know that view. And I certainly hope that you'd appreciate having that dialogue on what we like to think of as a home of free speech. Sunday Girl's talking about me needing a nap afterwards. A cheeky nap. See what you did there, Sunday Girl. I wonder who is behind Sunday Girl. Now I'm the conspiracy theorist. Holly says, I don't mind at all. That's great. Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here for 5 hours. And yes, I'm just about, you're right. It's 5 hours, 9 till 2 on a Saturday, 10 till 2 on a Sunday. For those who are confused, I was standing in for Sonia during the week. I'll just do that sometimes for colleagues. We like to help each other out here at TNT. We're more of a family of like-minded presenters than anything else. So you'll see us popping up from time to time. Doesn't always mean we've changed the schedules, but it means that, you never get bored of us. And there's so many more questions here. Marathon Radio Show, got staying power, lad, says Mark Delaney. Mark, it's just what I do. I love doing broadcasting because for me, it's a combination. I used to say a conversation with the nation. Now it's a chat with the planet, and hopefully you like the service. Let's get on. I want to say one thing about what we've discussed so far, and then I'll introduce my next guest. The story so far today, we started with Duncan White, who was explaining and observing why it's so difficult to get an alternative narrative, a different story out there other than the we're all going to die because of climate change story. A very important film was released, premiered in Leicester Square, Leicester Place to be precise, at the Prince Charles Theatre. And it completely, totally dismantles the prospect of there being any kind of a climate crisis, let alone one created by the human race. Didn't get coverage. That was interesting. Then we talked about Vanessa, with Vanessa from 30 years of experience in the prison service. And Vanessa Frake Harris said that she felt that it's being abused as a system. It doesn't always give rehabilitation because people don't like rehabilitation. They want punishment. And I realized from the feedback, I need to do a little bit more on that. We'll try and get some people in to talk about that particular subject at some point. Then we talked to the self-styled Paul Mad Dog McGowan, an anti-establishment artist who thinks for himself and got very, very irritated about the media coverage, as have I during the week, where it's been trivialized. Then we moved on to Anne Widdecombe, who now campaigns for Reform UK, former government minister. And we talked about this scandal, the ensuing scandal, which will inevitably rear its head once people get organized enough to do this, and potentially led by Anne and her party, about the child maintenance system, with a particular focus on those, including in the military, who are paying more than they have to and have no right to appeal. And this worrying statistic that, according to their data, suicide levels are higher amongst those affected by the child maintenance system than those who are not. And we also talked about the frustrations that she feels, and which I share, about the current political system. And she blames identity politics, which usurps merit. Well, we have one more guest today. Tim Scott joins me in a moment to talk about what I think is one of the very greatest scandals right up there in comparison to the Bloody Sunday scandal, which occurred when members of the armed forces shot unarmed civilians in a place called Derry in Northern Ireland, or the north of Ireland, in the early 70s, and acted as a recruiting sergeant for the IRA, a paramilitary force which ran a multi-decade campaign of violence to try and fulfill its rights, its objectives and what it believed to be its rights. All of that with me, Lemotopic. If we're nothing, we are certainly varied, and hopefully we get a lot of depth as well right here on TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
A man who's done what's best for the country and is doing what's best for the world, at least in his view. It's Tim Scott, former military man and also the chair of the Freedom Association. We'll find out what both of those things are in just a moment. Tim, great to see you again. Thanks for joining me on the Lembitopic Show on TNT.
Lembit, great to be back on, and thanks for having me back.
I know you've moved your Saturday around a little bit to help us, and I really appreciate it.
No worries.
I hope you'll find it's worth it too, so that you can express your views.
Yeah, you bet.
Not least because you are one of the very best people I can imagine in the United Kingdom to pronounce on the state knife scandal in a moment. But before we go into that, let's remind ourselves of your experience, your brief biography, a brief history of Tim in terms of the military experience and the Freedom Association. Go ahead.
Yeah, so back in the day, I was a lieutenant, then a captain in the army, and I had some experience. I know you've got political experience of Northern Ireland to Lembit during your time in Parliament. I was in charge of a platoon, a great bunch of guys. The numbers were sort of in the mid to high 20s during the Troubles in Derry or Londonderry, depending on your sort of particular kind of take on that. And I've always been involved in politics. I was quite involved with UKIP. I was Southeast chairman back in the day, overseeing 84 constituencies. I stood in my local constituency against Dominic Grieve, the Sky News's go-to favorite Remainer. I thought, well, somebody has to stand against him. These days, I've got one foot in the Reform camp and one foot in the Conservative camp. I do have a Conservative membership. It means I can go to some quite interesting dues. We had Ian Duncan Smith over the other day. You remember him, you know, the quiet man is back and he's turning up the volume. Interesting to hear him say. So today I worked for a while for a investment management company based in the city. I don't know if you can see the little painting there or a print. That's the Shard, and our office was just in front of the walkie-talkie there, Tower Bridge, nice view of the city. And I sort of semi-retired in September, but to do political stuff, I do quite a bit of work for the Freedom Association, as you say, Lembit, and I'm busier than ever. I'm considering ringing up and asking for my old job back so I can get a break.
They're saying I'm busier than ever as well. A slight digression, but these comments are tickling me, Tim. Sunday Girl says, Lembit, chat shows my name. And they all started to call me Sunday Girl, Blondie. No conspiracy here. Ha ha. Mm. Are you Blondie? Are you? Really? I think you might be Debbie Harry. I'm pretty sure that you are. Actually.
You never know. You never know who's watching, Lembit.
Tim, I do know it is Debbie Harry, actually. No, it is, yeah. But that's another story. Ivan Phillips says, I've been on a ramble for 2.5 hours and Lembit's still on. You could have said, Lembit's still rambling on too, but you didn't say that. Very polite. Thank you. Little Carol says, that's my dream job, that chatting all morning and afternoon, Little Carol. But you don't know how lonely I am when I'm not on the telly. You've probably got a social life, Little Carol. Ivan found your comment amusing. And then a slightly more serious point from Little Carol. I worked with two women whose partners were in prison, both had two kids. They'd boast about saving the maintenance money. I go to Spain every half term, school holiday. Both dripped with gold chains. Mm. And Little Carol says, and I don't think this is even relevant, Tim. Maybe this is a code for you as a former military man. Little Carol says, okay. I've got 28 minutes before I've won a pair of pink and purple boots for £10 on eBay. Well, Little Carol, the millions of people listening will all be making counter bids now. So I hope I haven't really blown that for you.
Somebody will swoop with 3 seconds to go.
You can't do it. You need to focus on the show. You'll still be on air at that time. Two thoughts, one observation from me and then a question from Holly. We'll get into the steak knife thing just after the break in a few minutes. But my observation is if you've got 1 foot in the Reform UK camp, and 1 foot in the Conservative camp, you're going to be one-legged after the next election, aren't you?
Well, yeah, then I'll end up, then I really will end up walking around in circles. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, you know, where it's all going. We actually have a very good Conservative MP here, Joy Morrissey. But I'm really almost reduced to a state of despair about the state of the Conservatives. You know, we were all... singing the praises of the fantastic majority that they won, and I've been watching the rise and fall of Boris Johnson documentary, and is it on Channel 4? It's quite interesting actually, just sort of following that, and we were all terribly excited about the first decent Tory majority since Maggie Thatcher. And it's incredible to look back, Lembit, and think that in that gap between getting Brexit done in inverted commas and 31st of Jan 2020, and then when COVID hit mid to late March, the Conservatives in that February of 2020, they were 20% ahead, in not 20% behind as they are now. And I think, you know, okay, so they got Brexit done, but I mean, what else have they done really?
Anne Widdecombe would disagree. She said that they haven't got Brexit done. They haven't done anything with it, was her phrase.
Well, that's a fair point. I do worry about, why have we put why have we put corporation tax back up again? We need a competitive corporation tax. It was taking in record revenues at 19%. And, we've put it back up to 25%. We need these competitive edges. I was always very clear, if we were going to leave the European Union and the single market, etc., we would need to offer business a tax and a regulatory dividend or bonus or edge. And, you know, we haven't done that. So, we've left, but we're struggling to make the most of it.
I know you're part of the Freedom Association, very senior member of it. I want to finish off on that at the end. To ask this, what does the Freedom Association do? We'll talk in more detail later, but what's it do?
Well, it's been around since the 1970s, and it's a group that works for, and we have these what we call the 10 principles of a free society. I just got the little list here: individual freedom, personal and family responsibility, rule of law, limited government, a free market economy, national parliamentary democracy, strong national defences. And then we've had in the last few years, sadly, we've had to add the following, which in the past you could have taken for granted, which sadly these days we feel you no longer can, a free press and other media, freedom of religion and belief, and freedom of speech, expression, and assembly. So that's a bit of a, I hope you'll excuse me, sort of rattling off the list there. But I mean, we feel that all of those freedoms, freedom is now in crisis. All of those freedoms are now under threat in some form or some guise or other, Lembit. And, you know, freedoms that we could take for granted are now under threat. And I particularly fear a Labour government. I do not think they will be a friend of free speech.
Mazzy says, this is rhetorical, Tim, so don't respond just now. Do they exist, a real true Tory MP? That's rhetorical. We're not here for that, really. We'll talk about that at the end if you have time. And one question, it's a question that often comes up from those on TNT Radio live chat, because to many it's a litmus test of where you stand in politics. Holly asks, what are Tim Scott's views on the jabs being in the Freedom Association?
Okay, so I took two doses of AstraZeneca, but I've refused to have any boosters. Now at the moment, the NHS is offering me about five jabs. They're offering me a COVID booster, pneumonia, flu, shingles, and I think there's even one other. So at the moment, I'm being offered four or five. I mean, look, it's a difficult decision. It's a personal decision. I've decided not to have the COVID booster. I did recently have the shingles jab, actually, because I saw what happened to my mother-in-law when she got shingles. I mean, she really was in a desperate, desperate state. And when our kids were younger, we faced this dilemma about the MMR, the mumps, measles, rubella virus. Was it too strong? You know, people were having adverse reactions to it. And I think what convinced me was, I had a work colleague who caught mumps as a child and was deaf in one ear. And I thought, well, if it can make you deaf in one ear, it can make you completely deaf. So eventually we took the decision to let the kids have the MMR vaccine. I don't want to end up like a dartboard, but I mean, I wouldn't call myself an anti-vaxxer as such.
Okay. But do you think that, would you, if had you been in the Prime Minister at the time, leaving aside the fact our Prime Minister obviously didn't believe in himself because he just completely ignored his own laws and his own rules and lost his job for it. But leaving aside his hypocrisy, had you been the Prime Minister, would you have said, we're going to make life hard for you if you don't get a jab? Or would you have said it was voluntary?
Yeah, that's, well, look, it's got to be voluntary, bodily autonomy and all of that. And I think undue pressure was put on people to get vaccinated. Some of the ads were, I thought, quite awful, you know, look in his eyes and tell her, you know, all this kind of thing. I think I wore a mask for a bit, but I think the evidence is very mixed whether masks actually did any good or not.
I'm
kind of coming round to that point of view. Everybody, I mean, I had to laugh, Lembit, when I drove down the road and there was a car coming the other way. There was a guy in the car on his own wearing a mask. I thought, what the heck is all that about? You know, so they ran this sort of, over the top campaign. And then now we know some of the things that were going on in Downing Street. And I think you can't really mandate or really lean on people to get vaccinated unless it can be proved that the vaccination stops it spreading. And there was really no evidence that the COVID vaccine actually stopped you giving it to other people.
I think it
lessened the symptoms if you caught it. There's some evidence, but also there's quite serious allegations now of vaccine harms. I think that is something we do need to get to the bottom of. But
I was harmed by the third vaccine. So finish your point. I need to get a break.
Yeah. No, let the truth come out. I do worry that the COVID inquiry seems to be more interested in gossip and who said, you know, who was nasty to whom on WhatsApp. And we're not really going to get the bottom of this.
I think we have already. I think the statistics show quite clearly that there's an increased death rate with those who were vaccinated, which is increases vaguely proportionately to the number of vaccines that you've had. I'll never take anything to do with COVID again. I think it's given me a long-term health problem involving blood pressure.
Yeah, that's
now
it.
Seems to be under control. It seems to be under control now. It seems to be recovering, but it's taken years.
Well, Lembit, you're far from the only one. And certainly, you know, I'm not having any COVID, I'm not having any COVID boosters. But that's my personal choice. I certainly think also, Lembit, there's a lot of evidence now that the lockdowns did at least as much damage as COVID. And, you know, never again must we allow the whole country, you know, schools should never have been closed. There's loads of kids.
I'm going to have to stop you there just to be sort of being a bit rude. We need to go to a break, but after the break, I cut you off there a bit, but
no worries.
Picture and hopefully it's answered the question to our viewers. After that, I want to talk to you about what I think is a tremendous scandal from the Troubles in Northern Ireland. That's the steak knife scandal. You're listening to the Lembit Opic Show here on Today's News Talk. We'll see you in a minute.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on Today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Lembit Opic Show. Just another half hour to go. That's 4.5 hours down, 35 minutes to go. But we save the best till last. Actually, it's consistently good. To quote Donald Trump, I give myself an A+. Well, I'll leave that for you to decide. A few comments here before we go back to my guest, Tim Scott. Little Carol says, if you get anything for free from the government, it's a scam. I take it you mean the vaccination. It could be worse than a scam, actually. Red says, pandemic was fake. Everybody here knows that. Mazzy says, but it was all going so well, Lembit. Always want to start a ruckus. Well, I was asked to ask the question. I am your servant. Unlike most of the politicians I come across, I remember that I work for you when I'm here. And I'm not sure if this is relevant to what I'm saying, but I'm going to read this out anyway. Lisa says, you guys should watch Jason Osborne's show from today. Very interesting. I certainly agree with that. Just two more. Sunday Girl says, downgraded from highly contagious disease. on Gov website the day before lockdowns, too late then, though the masses had bought the predictive programming COVID-1, flu zero. And finally, Red says they murdered our elders to create the illusion of a pandemic. We all know this to be true. Why doesn't your guest? I would go further, but I want to get into this other subject now. And that's steak knife. The £40 million
yes.
report into this, which Tim will tell us about, looked into the activities and behavior of a man known as Steak Knife. Who was he? What was he doing? And why do some of us think this was the one of the two greatest scandals of the Northern Ireland conflict? But this one was state-sponsored. Tim, in your words, who was Steak Knife? What was this about? What did the report discover?
Okay, so thanks, Len. But yeah, so Steak Knife was the code name for the Brits, our top informer in the IRA. And he was head of the IRA's internal security unit, otherwise known as the Nutting Squad, because if you ended up in their hands, that's, you know, what would happen to you. And he was agents within, informers within the IRA. And I'm not going to give away any secrets here. You know, I was Green Army, not intelligence. And, you know, all of what I'm going to say is publicly available. Is agents were run by either by RUC Special Branch, the police, or they were run, some of them, a few were run directly by MI5. And some of them were run by a slightly shadowy and controversial unit called FRU, Force Research Unit, which was an army unit. And you know, there was a bit of rivalry between them. They were often very protective of their sources. Steak Knife, Freddie Scapatici, was run by FRU, Force Research Unit. He died last year. I mean, there's no doubt he was a brutal and controversial character, not the sort of guy you'd want as a neighbor or to be friends with. And he did supply us with a lot of intelligence, but also a lot of people died at his hands. I think it's important to say that. You've got this report, the Canova report. You can look it up. It's 200 pages long. I did my best to have a sort of quick look at it. It's £40 million worth, as you say, Lembit. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to know that the internal. I mean, I've got to say, Lembit, I can't agree with you that it was as bad as Bloody Sunday. We spoke about Bloody Sunday last time I was on, but there's no doubt that this internal security unit was responsible for a lot of deaths in the dozens. But let's be clear, they didn't target the security forces, police or army. They also didn't target innocent civilians. The IRA, unlike Hamas, the IRA only very rarely did that. But there's no doubt that some people who were not informers, who were IRA members, who were not informers, were taken to their death, sent to their death by this IRA internal security unit that was headed by Freddie Scapatici, a thoroughly brutal and repulsive man. And if you fell into their hands, at best you would get a severe going over. At worst, you would be tortured into a confession and shot.
The reason I say that I said it wasn't worse than Bloody Sunday, I said it's one of the two greatest outrages perpetrated by the British military that I know of. I would say a third was the abuse of Republican prisoners in a place called Castlereagh Police Station. It's quite a parochial point. I won't go into it now. But in terms of unacceptable behaviour by the British state, the killing of unarmed civilians on a peace march in the early 1970s in Derry, and the antics of Steak Knife, de facto endorsed by the British state, both led to the deaths of lots of people. Now, I've tried to find out, I think a dozen or so people died in Bloody Sunday, even there's a slight debate about the number of woundings and what else happened around that. But I think that's a pretty close figure. When it comes to Steak Knife, I haven't found it easy to actually get a figure. Now, there's a book written about it. It's probably in there. But I'm willing to believe he's killed more people than were killed in Bloody Sunday.
Yeah. Yes. Bloody Sunday. I mean, I've always felt that was a terrible injustice, and it was quite. And the initial report, the Widgery report, which came out at the time, really was a complete whitewash. And it was good to get to the, even though the new inquiry, if we can call it that, took forever and cost a fortune, it was good to get to the bottom of it. Bloody Sunday was 14 killed and 14 wounded. Now, 14. The IRA's internal security unit was responsible for dozens of deaths. And there's a book called Secret Victory by an ex-RUC special branch officer called William Matchett. And he recounts in that book that something like over the years, not necessarily under Freddie Scappaticci, but that over the years, something like 80 to 90 IRA members were killed, murdered by the IRA in internal investigations, which is a lot. But that's over the whole course of the conflict. So killed at the hands of the IRA. Some of them would have been informers or touts, as they were known within the IRA. But others, I'm sure, were innocent in as much as you could call anyone who was a member of the IRA innocent. So let's just remember that about this very dodgy unit headed by this brute, Freddie Scappaticci. They only dealt with, as the name suggests, internal security unit. They only dealt with, as it were, people who were already in the IRA.
I'm looking at, doesn't really exonerate him. In August last year, the Irish Times, I'm looking down at the story now, Freddie Scappaticci, even in death, the IRA double agent commands a wall of silence. In Northern Ireland, talking about the British Army spy in the IRA is taboo, despite the 30 murders linked to him. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I remember now, it was 14 dead, 14 wounded, pretty much. There were other injuries and so on, but basically, let's use those figures for Bloody Sunday. There's been hundreds of millions of pounds spent on looking at that, and I should have remembered those figures. 30 deaths associated with one man makes that twice, his involvement twice as deadly as Bloody Sunday. And he was endorsed, as you yourself have said, by the British state. He personally killed at least two police officers. And I wonder how we got to a stage where the British establishment was willing to endorse that kind of behavior.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt, Len, that he was on the payroll. And we've got this Canova inquiry, which is I would just point out, it is a police force with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, investigating an intelligence service. And the war in Northern Ireland, the conflict in Northern Ireland, it was a dirty war. It wasn't a game of village cricket. And the use of informers, controversial as it is, was one of the major factors, which, and there were others, which I if you'll give me a minute, I could come round to, that led the IRA to believe, under the Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness leadership, both of whom had been chiefs of staff of the IRA, that had led them to believe that the war they were fighting was unwinnable. And they led the IRA via some skullduggery and arm twisting to declare their truce in 1994. So this was really an imperfect situation. Not everything was done right by the security forces. There were allegations of collusion and things like that, Lembit. So I don't defend the entire record of what happened with Steak Knife.
Well, this is down to the ends justifying the means. I grew up in Northern Ireland. I don't want to get into a dispute of our opinions, because that doesn't really help our viewers very much. I'll express this once, but move on. I don't believe that Freddie Scappaticci did anything to improve the chances of peace, because the IRA thought he was on their side. And I don't believe that his say-so, when he was a murderous piece of scum, would have been particularly important to the rather more intellectual individuals who were seeking to engage with the British military, whether you like the British authorities, whether you like them or not. People like Gerry Adams and Gerry Kelly and Martin McGuinness, they are very eloquent people, or were very eloquent people. One of them still alive, of course. I don't think there's any merit in what Stake Knife did. And the report itself, Tim, you know, says that Stake Knife's antics killed more people than they saved. I can't see any angle from which the British authorities can do anything other than admit that they were complicit in using terrorism against terrorism and torture against terrorism.
Yeah. It's difficult to say how many lives were saved by the informers, because you're talking about attacks, IRA attacks, which had to be called off, which never happened, weapons that were recovered, which were never used in anger. So there's no doubt that the use of informers, I think, along with a number of other things, which I'm happy to go through in a second, which cut the conflict short and persuaded the Adams and McGuinness leadership to lead the IRA, sometimes kicking and screaming, down the path to a ceasefire. So it's very difficult to say how many lives were saved by attacks which never happened and by a conflict which was cut short.
But your gainsaying report, I'm going to push you on this a bit, Tim.
Sure. Mm.
This is my point when I'm not expressing the opinion of Lembit Opik. I'm expressing the conclusion of the official £40 million government-sponsored Canova inquiry. I will quote to you from Britain's state-sponsored media. So this is the state-sponsored media that gets paid by the government to do its job. It says, an army spy operating at the heart of the IRA during the Troubles in Northern Ireland probably cost more lives than he saved, a report has found. Operation Canova investigated the agent known as Stake Knife. There's no equivocation there. They are saying, after £40 million of investigation, he did cost more lives than he saved. Unless you are gainsaying this report, a report which causes great shame on the British government, why would they make this up? Then it's an open and shut case. The British allowing this murderer to work on their behalf cost more lives than he saved.
Well, not everybody will agree in that way with that conclusion. It's no doubt that this was a thoroughly odious man, a terrible, brutal man. And part of the issue here, Lembit, is because this issue has arisen before. When you have informers within a terrorist organization, they will not work for you, or they will not be any use to you unless they can carry on with their activities. Because the moment they become an informer and they say to the IRA, oh, guys, I'm not doing it, I'm not carrying on with my normal activities, then firstly, that would place them under suspicion within the IRA. And secondly, if they're no longer involved with the IRA, they're no longer any use to you as an informer. So there is this dilemma that you have to allow them to continue, but also to disrupt IRA activities from within. And if you say to them, well, the minute you become an informer, you have to stop doing the stuff that you were doing before, well, they will place themselves under suspicion and there'll be no use to you as an informer. So it's a devil's bargain. Lembit.
Okay, we're going to come back to that. I'm going to really press you on this because I think this is a means versus ends debate. We'll come back to Tim Scott in a minute. I'll read some of the comments out from TNTRadio.live as well. I'm actually only on for another 15 minutes, not for the rest of the day, folks. So you do need to get in quickly if you want to make a comment. Tim will be with me till the top of the hour, according to GMT, which is about 16 minutes or so. You're listening to Lembit Opik here on the Lembit Opik Show on today's News Talk. We'll see you in a minute.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-tirement.
Pre-tirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pretirement.org.
Retirement savings options? Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisisretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
My dad was a farmer. The guy was bigger than life. He wasn't someone that liked to show his emotion or liked to show when he was struggling. But we all struggle. I want to show emotion to my kids. It's something that brings me so much joy. And I want them to see me working through things. Allow your kids to know that it's okay to struggle, that even dad doesn't know the answer sometimes, but we're going to figure it out together.
This is the Lembit Opik Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to back to the center of a heated debate between me, Lembit Opik, and my guest, Tim Scott, about a very vexatious set of revelations about a man called Freddie Scappaticci, also known by the codename Steak Knife, who was in the pay of the British government and a murdering scumbag in Northern Ireland, where I grew up, linked apparently to at least 18 deaths. We can argue about the numbers, but it seems to be more than the whole of Bloody Sunday, if you look at the deaths and those abducted. Tim and I are in a dispute about whether there's any merit to Steak Knife's involvement. I'm saying there wasn't. Tim is saying there was. Let me just read some of your comments out. I won't be able to comment individually on these because we have so little time. You'd think we'd have had lots of space, but we haven't, even though I've been here for almost 5 hours. The British state was running it all, says Jane. Seeing Holly saying, weren't Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams paid by the British Secret Services? Lots of rumours swirling around about that, I have to say. Can't answer your question there. They would probably say that they weren't, but this is the nature of these murky questions. Blodders says, convenient that Steak Knife was dead before his name came out. No, well, Blodders, since the state was responsible for sponsoring him, I'm sure the state let him die before this came out. I think that's part of the scandal, to be honest with you. Little Carol didn't win the lottery. Bad luck. Okay, never mind. Okay, fine. I think that's what that was about. Oh, no, sorry. Little Carol, you didn't get the boots. Sorry, I hope that wasn't because I highlighted the betting or the bidding. If so, let me know. I'll buy some boots. Blodders says this to you, Tim. This guy's not a good ambassador for the Freedom Association, it seems. I was shouting at the potatoes at the allotment. People are thinking, if you believe in freedom, you probably shouldn't be believing in the concealing of Steak Knife's terrible performance as a human being. Maybe they're not directly related, but I get the point. As somebody who believes in freedom and therefore presumably a free society, I wouldn't be too keen on having our servants. They are the bottom of the pile, the politicians that we pay for to do what we want. I don't want them to be spending my taxpayers' money endorsing a man who potentially killed somebody I knew in Northern Ireland.
Well, let the truth come out, Lembit. I mean, there's no doubt that this use of informers, of which he is perhaps the most brutal example. I mean, it is a Faustian pact. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But this was a dirty war, as I said before, not a game of village cricket. And I think that the use of informers, I mean, I'll give you an example. Again, not giving away any secrets here. There was an informer in Derry called Raymond Gilmore, and he's written a book about it, so I'm not giving away any secrets. The IRA in Derry had an M60 American Army machine gun, which they brought over from Belfast. And thanks to Raymond Gilmore, they were never able to use it in anger. Because he was on the squad that was deploying it, and every time it was sent out, he would tell his handler where the ambush was, and the area would be declared out of bounds. And eventually, he found out where the weapon was being kept, and we were able to recover it. Now, there's no doubt if it hadn't been for that informer, they would have got away with using that weapon, and who knows how many people would have been killed. So it's very difficult to sort of put those lives saved on the ledger. I mean, that's perhaps a more sort of amicable example. So I just give that to you as an example of how informers, along with a host of other factors, were able to convince the IRA to move towards the ceasefire of 1994, along with the a number of other things like the SAS casualties that they had at things like the Lochall ambush, the Gibraltar shootings, slightly more controversially, a number of bungled explosions, the Enniskillen. You'll remember the Enniskillen bombing, Lembit, where they blew up a Remembrance Sunday parade. They decided to contest elections in the Irish Republic, so they had to worry a bit more about public opinion. Their biggest and best arms dump from Colonel Gaddafi in Libya was picked up by the Irish Coast Guard. By the French Coast Guard, and then the Loyalists laid in and started murdering them as well. So these were a whole host of factors in the mid to late 80s and the early 90s, and others, along with the successful use, if morally questionable, use of informers, that convinced the IRA leadership. And you've mentioned some of the names. Jerry Kelly, Mitchell McLaughlin, Danny Morrison, with his, as I think we said last time, ballot box and one hand Armalite in the other, to move the IRA with a bit of skullduggery and arm twisting towards a situation where in 1994 they declared a ceasefire.
I was Secretary of State, Shadow Secretary of State for Northern Ireland. Sorry, I promoted myself for a moment there. I was Shadow Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, and that wasn't my impression. But there are two points here. One point, which we've covered and probably isn't worth going around in a circular argument here. You feel that there may be some justification of some sort for the British state employing the murderer and torturer state knife. I see no merit in that whatever. No merit at all, because it completely undermines the legitimacy of a state which is against murder and torture. Mm-hmm. We need to park that because we have a different point of view on that. But you can, unless I misunderstand you on that, I want to move to the second thing. You can, of course, correct me. I don't want to put words in your mouth or mislead my viewers. Mm-hmm. The second point is you believe that all of this skullduggery, to use your phrase, caused the IRA and Sinn Féin to come to the negotiating table. I don't agree. In the early 1970s, we know there were back channels between the IRA and the British government. The five just demands were one of the phrases. There was the peace women. They were used to some extent as messengers. And that was nothing to do with steak knife. It was nothing to do with an embedded torturer and murderer in the IRA. What I think happened was eventually both sides could see it was an indefinite stalemate, partly thanks to American and South African intervention. Things changed, and some visionary activity by people like Mo Mollam, who's, I still think, the greatest Secretary of State for Northern Ireland in my political time, and I worked closely with her. So to summarise, I can't see any way of justifying that terrible man's behaviour, unforgivable behaviour. I can't see any justification for the British state sponsoring a murderer. And I don't believe either of those things had anything to do with the eventual peace process. That was achieved by talking, not employing a murderer.
Well, Lembit, as you've said before, shouting is better than shooting. And I think also there's no doubt that some of the underlying causes of the original conflict, like really poor housing, that really helped. A lot of money was put into public housing to alleviate some of the undeniable injustices of the 1960s. But the IRA moved for a reason. It wasn't just one of those things. And I think that they had been committed to the armed struggle and had always said that there would not be any ceasefire until the British said that they would withdraw from Northern Ireland. That was always the IRAF. I think it may even have been in their constitution. And the IRA didn't just randomly move towards a ceasefire. There was a series of things that pushed them in that direction, some of which you've mentioned as well. My list wasn't intended to be exclusive.
Exhaustive.
Exhaustive. Yes, thank you. So including, yes, the addressing of the some of the underlying causes as well. And there were, you know, you mentioned back channel communications. There's no doubt John Hume, a resident of Derry, he played a role as well. And Martin McGuinness, who's like State Life, is no longer with us. He'd been talking to the Irish government, and there were back channel communications as well. But the IRA moved towards a ceasefire for a reason. It wasn't just a random event. And there were a number of things, some of which were security related, some of which were political. And I think I'm sort of talking more about some of the military and security things. You, with your political experience, have probably got a better view of that than I had at the time. But I think the conflict came to a resolution, and that in itself saved a huge number of lives.
You take a military perspective, having had that experience. I do take a political one. You remind me of a phrase, and I don't know where I picked it up, but it goes like this: a person with a hammer sees everything as a nail. And maybe we both look at different nails on this. We've rehearsed that aspect as much as we meaningfully can. I don't think I've got much movement from you, and vice versa. It's really not important what you and I think. It's, it gives our viewers the opportunity to decide whether they think there is justification for the role of a person like Freddie Scappuccini. Scappuccini, I don't care if I get his name wrong. I think he's a scumbag. But he was paid by the state.
Can't disagree on that.
The advice I give to viewers is you need to look more deeply into it. Our debate here for an hour on today's news talk just touches the surface. If you are interested in it, it's a fascinating story, and you'll find a lot of meaningful literature on that. But do it properly. Reference goods for that, because otherwise you'll get opinions rather than an objective fact. I want to bring this together in this way. It's a general question for you, Tim. Based on what you said, and being mindful of the fact you're head of the Freedom Association, if it's acceptable for the British government to pay for a murderer in Northern Ireland in the Troubles, presumably then you would think it was acceptable for the British government to train and sponsor Osama bin Laden to defeat the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan via his leadership of the Mujahideen.
Well, there are those who will tell you that it was America who created the Taliban
documented. Charlie Wilson's War is a film about it, and there's a book about it as well.
And there's one of the Rambo films with Sylvester Stallone where he sides up with the Taliban against the Soviets. So again, these are messy, controversial conflicts where, you know, the dividing line between practical military necessity and, you know, what's morally right, you know, is not always that clear cut. And I think you've got to be very careful if you're going to start sending weapons. And I mean, look at what we're doing with Ukraine. Are we right to back Ukraine militarily? I think we are.
So what you've done now, Tim, is you've guaranteed yourself another spot on my show, because we've talked about Steak Knife, Freddie Scappaticci, but I want to go deeper with you next time. I want to get to the question, how far is too far when you're talking about means and ends for a state? Let's not open that further. Yep. You've just thrown Ukraine into the mix there. So many comments here. James sums it up 100% more to it than meets the eye. Great listening then, but thank you for that. But I think James sums it up 100% more to this than meets the eye. Perhaps we can reveal some more truths to the facts that we can establish and our opinions about those on another occasion. Tim, Scott, thank you for taking the time. I know you moved your day about a little bit to be with us today. You will come back to continue this debate, won't you?
I certainly will, Lembit. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you here. And whatever viewers, whatever position they take, hopefully you see that we're living up to our creed here, lighting the fuse for free speech. I definitely disagree with Tim Scott, but you can agree with me or Tim. You maybe take a different view as well. But with that, out of time. That's 5 hours gone. I'll be back for another four tomorrow, starting at tomorrow morning at 10:00 GMT. I hope you found it interesting, an eclectic mix. I've got some homework to do and a few new subjects to cover as well. Thank you to my guests. Thank you for my team. More than anything, thank you to you all over the world listening to today's news talk. Hopefully it's been edifying, stimulating, and you can get on with your day. But remember to stay tuned to TNT, the home of free speech. I'm Lembit Obick. This was the Lembit Obick Show. This is TNT. See you tomorrow.